This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome. Welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington, and coming up on Africa News Tonight...
Otherwise, the attack yesterday was an attack that we expected from Al-Shabaab, since it has been their trend that attacks during Christmas and Easter seasons or Christian festivities are imminent.
That's Lieutenant Colonel Dio Akiki with the Ugandan Defense Force talking about a major Al-Shabaab attack on African Union troops in Somalia. Details coming up. Also, Winnie Mandela, who served as a spearhead of South Africa's anti-apartheid movement, has died at age 81 from a long illness. International election observers say they're trying to douse rising tensions as Sierra Leone waits for the results of the country's runoff vote for president. And Ethiopia's new prime minister reached out both to the political opposition and to a longtime rival, Eritrea, as he was sworn in today. We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight. Our top story, the UN says at least 34 civilians have been killed as Boko Haram militants staged a bloody retreat from a failed attack on the Borno state capital Maiduguri in northeast Nigeria. The area has seen numerous attacks that have left at least 120 dead this year. The government said last week that it is engaging in peace talks with one faction of Boko Haram, which has split into two. Yassin Gaba, the UN's deputy humanitarian coordinator in Nigeria, urged an end to the brutal killings, abductions and lootings that he says target civilians. The UN says 7.7 million people in northeast Nigeria badly need humanitarian aid because of years of attacks by Boko Haram and government countermeasures. The Nigerian military says its forces repelled Boko Haram's attempted assault on Maiduguri and engaged the retreating militants near the villages of Bilishowa and Ali Karanti. The military says it killed 13 of the attackers. Winnie Madikizela Mandela, who served as a spearhead of South Africa's anti-apartheid movement, while husband Nelson Mandela spent 27 years in prison, has died at age 81 from a long illness. As the best-known face in the fight against white rule, as her husband languished in jail, Winnie Mandela grew into a polarizing figure whose unrepentant tactics of rebellion grew to clash with Nelson Mandela's drive for reconciliation, democracy, and peace. While she maintained support among more radical black nationalists, Winnie Mandela's popularity slipped as she refused to show remorse for abductions and murders carried out in her name. She also came under criticism for expensive tastes and was further tainted by allegations of corruption, fraud, and theft. She once said her real marriage was to the African National Congress, which changed from an insurgent group to South Africa's ruling party when apartheid ended. Winnie and Nelson Mandela divorced in 1996. She later said in a newspaper interview that Nelson had gone soft in prison. African Union troops battled Al-Shabaab militants in Somalia for hours Sunday during two attacks at rural bases. Ugandan forces led the battle against the militants and say it killed at least 30 of the attackers. The Ugandan military says four of its soldiers were killed and several wounded. However, Al-Shabaab militants have said they killed more than 40 AU troops. Today, journalist Catherine Nambi in Kampala spoke with Lieutenant Colonel Dio Akiki, the deputy spokesman for the Ugandan Defense Forces, and has more.
The situation at the moment is calm in these areas as our forces continue to move around and make sure that there are no Al-Shabaab elements within our camp and that there is no any other injured soldier that could be under shrubs to ensure that everything is put on record. Otherwise, the attacker yesterday was an attacker that we expected from Al-Shabaab, since it has been their trend that attacks during Christmas and Easter seasons or Christian festivities are imminent. And we want to laud our soldiers for putting up a very good fight and giving Al-Shabaab a heavy blow, and what we would call like a bloody nose. And by evening yesterday, we were counting around 34 dead bodies of Al-Shabaab within the fighting ground. However, in the same attack, we lost 4 soldiers who died instantly during the improvised explosive device that was mounted on a vehicle that they used to break into our camp. There are a lot of conflicting reports around from different media houses, but this is simply propaganda put out by Al-Shabaab. And if you follow very well, their propaganda of the numbers killed on the side of UPDF was done right as the attack started. And this gives you a clear message that they are just doing propaganda. But at the moment, we are treating our injured soldiers who were airlifted by UN helicopters from the field, and they are now being treated at a level 2 hospital at our base in Mogadishu.
You said these attacks are usually during the festive seasons. Was there laxity on the part of UPDF to guard against such attacks this time?
There was no laxity at all. We had enough intelligence. Our forces had enough intelligence about the impending attack, and that's why you see that they managed to actually win the battle. The number of Al-Shabaab killed, the equipment captured, including those rocket-propelled grenades, bombs, and an assortment of weapons, AK-47, is a sign that they were ready for that battle and they were awake. In Somalia, there is no time for one to sleep. You doze off, you're gone. So our soldiers are under strict instructions. They are under strict command to make sure that they are always attentive at their place of work. And that's why they have done quite a good job on Al-Shabaab this time round.
How many bases were these that Al-Shabaab targeted?
Al-Shabaab targeted 3 of our bases, a base in Koryole, a base in Gorwain, and a base in Blumaler. These are bases based in the Lower Shabelle of Somalia, and that's where their target was. Some years back, they used to target the bases in Mogadishu, but since we fortified our security and security is improving in Mogadishu, they are not able to have this chance, because this time round they attacked over 130 kilometers outside of Mogadishu. Another camp is about 34 kilometers outside of Mogadishu.
That was Catherine Nambi speaking with Lieutenant Colonel Dio Akiki, the deputy spokesman for the Ugandan Defense Forces. International election observers say they're trying to douse rising tensions as Sierra Leone waits for the results of the country's runoff vote for president. The government sought to defend off the possibility of violence by banning most vehicles in Freetown during Saturday's balloting, given expectations of a very close race. The top two candidates, the ruling party's Samora Kamara and the opposition's Julius Madabiyu, finished about 1 percentage point apart during the first round of voting that saw turnout of 80%. The final results could take days to compile. Kamara was handpicked to replace outgoing president Ernest Bai Koroma. Paul Ijimi, a member of the ECOWAS observation mission, says the large security presence contributed to a largely peaceful voting process. Over the past 4 days, a ship operated by SOS Méditerranée and Doctors Without Borders has rescued nearly 300 migrants at sea. but SOS Mediterranee says on its last rescue it was told to let the Libyan military control the operation. The aid group was allowed to take only a few dozen ill or vulnerable migrants off an overloaded boat, while the rest were taken to Libya. The migrants were mostly from Africa and had hoped to make it to Europe. Journalist Josephine McKenna in Rome spoke with my colleague Kate Bound-Dawson today about the latest developments.
SOS Mediterranean is very upset because it's conducted three rescue operations over the weekend, and one in particular came into conflict with the Libyan Coast Guard. And this has been an issue that's been bubbling away for a while, affecting the NGOs that are trying to operate in the Mediterranean and conduct these rescues. On Saturday, the Aquarius received a call from Italian authorities saying that there was a vessel in distress off the coast of Libya. After a one-hour voyage, SOS located an inflatable boat in distress. And it seemed that just as they were arriving, the Libyan Coast Guard indicated that it would be assuming coordination of the operation on the direction of the Italian authorities. So what we saw were migrants in distress, and the Aquarius was on the scene first trying to offer assistance and indeed saved 39 vulnerable people. But then the Libyan Coast Guard intervened and took 90 others back to Libya.
Is it known where the people who were rescued were taken? Where did SOS take them?
Well, SOS conducted a total of three rescues and rescued 290 people. They have now just arrived in Italy today. All different ages. There were 5 pregnant women and 9 children and 54 unaccompanied minors. And these migrants that were rescued in the three rescues come from 20 different countries, including West African countries, Somalia, Egypt, and Libya.
What has happened to the people the Libyan government took into custody on Saturday, the 90?
This is why many of the NGOs are concerned about the safety and the welfare of migrants that are at risk in Libya. Often they are being taken back to holding centres. They're kept in very distressing conditions. Some have been exposed to torture, lack of sanitation, lack of food, and really some violent situations as well. So we really don't know what's happened to those migrants that were taken back there. And this is why SOS is so concerned. They're asking for greater clarification on an international level from European authorities to ensure that people's health, safety and welfare is protected.
That was journalist Josephine McKenna in Rome speaking with VOA's Kate Pound-Dawson. Israel's government says it has agreed with the United Nations to abandon plans to deport thousands of African asylum seekers today. The office of Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu said the UN Refugee Agency will arrange to resettle 16,000 of the migrants in Canada, Germany, and Italy. Most of the rest will be allowed to settle in Israel. Israel estimates there are about 35,000 African migrants in the country. Israel had planned on deporting the migrants to Rwanda and Uganda, a plan that the migrants and many of Israelis' international supporters had opposed. Most of the migrants are from Sudan and Eritrea. They began arriving more than a decade ago because of unrest and political violence in their home countries. In Malawi, pressure continues to mount on Finance Minister Gudol Gondui to resign over allegations of fraudulently allocating money to pro-government parliamentarians. He is accused of disbursing about $6 million to 86 MPs who supported the government to oppose the electoral reforms bill during the previous sitting of parliament. But Gondui says there was nothing wrong with the allocation, Lamek Masina reports from Blantyre.
Civil society organizations, or CSOs, started to call for Gondo's resignation early this month after a local newspaper reported on the allocations. They say they are concerned with the lack of transparency which has surrounded the whole issue. The pressure mounted when some opposition MPs withdrew from the list of beneficiaries after the CSOs accused them of being among those accepting bribes. The CSOs recently met with Gondwe, but say he failed to clarify the source and use of funds. Charles Gajoloweka is one of the CSO leaders pushing for Gondwe's resignation.
There is indeed nothing new that we got from the Minister of Finance, and our conviction is that what has been the public domain is exactly what we also got from the minister.
Normally, in Malawi, the government can persuade the head of the parliament to allot funds through a transparent budgetary process. It is not considered to be constitutional for the money to be given by the cabinet minister. Gondwe said the money came from taxes, grants and borrowing, and was saved from the readjustments of the 2017-2018 budget that saw cuts to the development budget. Earlier, he said the money will not be given directly to the members of parliament, but would go to individual projects in various constituencies. He said the funds will be channeled through local government authorities in their respective constituencies. Gajoloweka says during their latest meeting, Gondwe changed tune.
But when we met the minister, we were informed that it is no longer going to be the Ministry of Local Government then channeling these resources to district councils, but rather that this money will be centrally managed by the government, and we do not know up to now which ministry and what central government structure.
The NGOs suspect that the money given to the selected MPs is a way of abusing those who voted against the electoral reforms bill during last sitting of parliament. The bribes were aimed at a package of constitutional reforms which were not passed that would have changed electoral laws. They proposed a 50+1 system which requires a presidential candidate to gain more than half of the vote. Current president just needs the highest number of votes. The new laws would mandate runoffs if none of the candidates gets more than half of the total vote. Gondwe told local radio this week that he will not resign because he has done nothing wrong.
Unless they prove that we acted illegally, there's no point in my resigning. And they failed to prove that we acted illegally.
Gondwe says he believes the call for his resignation is politically motivated.
Yeah, they are being influenced by the political people. There was no doubt about that. So if the politicians want that, let's meet in parliament.
Opposition political parties are calling for authorities to call for an emergency sitting of parliament to discuss the matter. Leonard Menges is the spokesperson for Malawi Parliament. He says the call is not viable.
The meeting of parliament has a cost. And then we have also to know that parliament will be meeting as early May for the budget. And I don't see how an emergency meeting can be held now, and then they are also called for parliament.
Meanwhile, civil society organizations plan demonstrations on April 27 should Gondwe fail to resign. State House spokesman Ngeme Galilani told a local daily recently that he found the call for the Minister of Finance to resign or get fired on the basis of the project funds allocations completely ridiculous. In the meantime, the government has also offered to take the allocated money and offer a portion to all MPs. Several opposition MPs have said they want no part of it. Lamek Masina for VOA News, Blanta.
Diabetes remains the number one killer of women in South Africa. Health authorities say the condition is manageable if caught in time. Last week, the country released its mortality figures for 2016. They show overall among men and women that tuberculosis claims the most lives, followed by diabetes and HIV. The prevalence of diseases differ quite markedly for men and women. There is some good news, though. The figures show citizens are living longer. From Johannesburg, Nadia Same has the story.
Jennifer DeVries was diagnosed with type 2 diabetes nearly 20 years ago. She is one of around 2 million South Africans living with the condition.
I was in my late 50s when I was diagnosed. It has changed my life drastically because I love to eat sweets, dessert, chocolates, all the things that is a big no-no. Being a diabetic, it's very important to remember three things, which is M-E-D. M, remember to take your medication. E, you must have exercise. And the last thing is D, which is your diet, which you've got to watch.
Jennifer's diabetes was caught in the early stages. She now manages it by eating healthily and doing regular finger pricks at home to check her blood sugar level. Bridget McNulty is a type 1 diabetic, meaning she has to inject herself with insulin. She says early detection can save lives.
You know, diabetes is such an interesting condition because type 2 diabetes, which 90% of diabetics are type 2, can creep up on you. It's known as a lifestyle disease because it's linked to being overweight and not exercising and eating the wrong kinds of foods.
Bridget says when she was diagnosed 10 years ago, there was very little information available on how to live with the disease. It prompted her to start her own online magazine called Sweet Life to inform the public about diabetes. She encourages her readers to go to their local clinic or pharmacy to do a blood sugar test. It involves a finger prick and is usually over within 5 minutes.
Over the years, complications present themselves. And those complications can be very serious, like heart disease, liver failure, amputation, blindness. But because people aren't getting diagnosed early enough, by the time they're diagnosed, the complications are often quite advanced.
Overall, deaths in South Africa have decreased. This has been the trend since 2007. The Statistician General says the average lifespan of women in the country is 62 years, while for men it's 52. Causes of death are categorized into communicable diseases like TB or HIV, non-communicable diseases like diabetes or cancer, and non-natural death, for example, as a result of an assault. This is South Africa's Statistician General, Risenga Maluleke.
The number of deaths are declining. In the 2015 report, we had 473,000 deaths. Now we have 456,612 deaths recorded in 2016. But one of the things that we have also observed is that non-communicable diseases are now overtaking communicable diseases.
But McNulty says this trend does not correlate with African government's funding for diseases like diabetes, as the spending does not match the scale of the problem.
The International Diabetes Federation released figures on diabetes in Africa last year, and the numbers are higher than HIV and TB combined. But if you look at the amount of publicity and attention and funding that goes towards HIV and TB, it's huge because they've been in the spotlight for so many years. And diabetes is pushed to the side and people don't think it's that serious. And hopefully now with these statistics now, we're able to start advocating for diabetes to get more attention.
The mortality figures for 2016 also vary quite drastically by population group. For example, tuberculosis is most prevalent in the black population and to a much lesser extent affects the coloured population. Among South Africa's Indian and white populations, TB is not a significant cause of death, but heart disease is. I'm Nadia Sami in Johannesburg.
And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. For listeners on VOA's Nairobi FM station, please stay tuned for the Swahili Evening News coming up at 16:30 UTC. For all other listeners, please stay tuned to the Sunny Side of Sports. Tune in again at 1800 UTC for another edition of African News Tonight. On behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, John Dryden, thanks for choosing The Voice of America.
Hello, Africa. I'm James Butte, host of VOA's Daybreak Africa. VOA. When news breaks, VOA Africa is there, bringing you the news as it happens. Listen to Daybreak Africa Monday through Friday at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC. And our 5 minute newscast come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.